This is Mick James, and you're listening to the Power Rock Podcast with host Jim Madonna. So turn it off.
Onboard computers have primary control of all the vehicle's critical functions. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. Main start. 2, 1. Boost ignition and liftoff.
Hey everyone, Jim Madonna here, your host of Power Rock Podcast. I'd like to welcome you all to yet another episode, bringing you the best interviews from around the globe, from indie to mainstream, whether it be rock, metal, speed metal, contemporary, melodic rock, we got it all. And today is no different, because I have on the line singer-songwriter, actor and producer, Mr. Mick James. Mick, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, Jim?
Man, I'm doing outstanding, Mick. Mick, I want to thank you so much for giving me a call, taking your time. I know you're a busy cat, and this truly means a lot to me, man. Thanks so much, brother.
Oh, anytime, man. Anytime.
Mick, I'm a big fan and always have been, but there's a lot of fans out there that may not know who Mick James is. How about you lay the foundation for who you are and what you're about? We're going to go ahead after you get done with that, and we are going to get into some music. I have some fan questions for you. Man, let's just have a good time here. So I am going to put the ball in your court, my friend.
Well, I'm best known for being a producer, an engineer, you know, owning a recording studio and working with a lot of bands and a lot of, you know, different clients, like behind the scenes with Chris Angel for the last couple of 11 years. And I placed music all over TV shows on CBS and NBC, MTV, That Metal Show, and that's VH1, actually. All MTV shows, half of them I've never seen. Secretly Pregnant, this one, that one. We're on CBS, NBC, you know, playoff games and Super Bowl games. It goes on and on. I think I've even placed on stuff like Oprah, you know, WWE. So, you know, I'm basically a producer and a songwriter that's been placing music all over TV shows, most notably, again, for the Chris Angel stuff that I did for the last 11 years. I did all the 6 seasons of Mind Freak. I wrote the Mind Freak theme song with Chris. Was produced by Jonathan Davis of Korn. And myself was a thrill. And in the last couple of years, I've been working on a solo project, part of a movie. My CD is part of it's a soundtrack to a movie I'm making. And I've become from behind the scenes to being the front guy in a band, which I've always been a band playing, but I hadn't played live in a couple of years because I had left my previous band and was concentrating on the solo thing. And it's called Mick James is Dead. It's a dark fantasy thriller of a movie, of a musical, I should say. I hate the word musical, but it's a musical because it's not not a rock opera, because not every word is sung, but there is singing in the movie. So, and we have some confirmed already, but we're looking to get more, a bunch of some serious rock and roll stars to be in the movie and make appearances and little cameos and whatnot. And it's something that I've been working on for so long. You know, we're out there, we're playing, we just got back from the West Coast and we're doing a bunch of other things. I'm New York based, so that was pretty exciting to do my 4th and 5th gig out in L.A. and Vegas. And that's it. I'm coming to get you. That's what all I can say is I'm putting myself out there, and Mick James is Dead is going to come to a town near you.
Killer, man. You know, Mick, I want to know this. How did the idea of Mick James is Dead?
Well, it was kind of like a fluke. You know, I had been tossing up doing a CD for a long time. I mean, I've put out 5 CDs previous with my old band, Earth Eats Dog. And when it came time to do my own thing, I really wanted something with my name in the title. I didn't know if I wanted to name it a band name or just call it Mick James. And it's just tossing up all these things. I had maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 pieces of music written, and nothing was sparking me for the lyrics. I wasn't really thinking about it. Every time I tried to come up with stuff, I was like, yeah, this is great. I listen to it and love it. Never really come up with any lyrics for it. I didn't really have like a concept or a focal point of what I wanted to do and what I wanted the CD to be like. And, you know, I wasn't necessarily thinking I wanted a concept CD, but me and my buddies were working on a Super Bowl piece of old things. And we were kidding around. I was telling him, I really need like a band name, throwing out all those names. And he just blurted it out. He just, you know, why don't you call it Mick James is Dead? And, you know, and of course I thought he was crazy. And I said, it's kind of nutty. And I went home and I thought about it and I fell asleep and I woke up in the morning and it just floodgate opened up all this creative. He just sparked so much in me like a muse. It was like incredible. Just title sparked Billy's lyrics and titles and you know, song titles and just concept for a stage show. And it just visually came all together. You know, one of the songs you're going to play, Guess What, You're Dead, was an existing song I'd written for somebody for a different movie. Between that song and the concept, it just formed the entire idea for the movie. And believe me when I tell you, I tossed it up maybe a day saying, is this a little nutty? Is this a little crazy? Am I overstepping my bounds here? What am I doing? Even to this day, even though I've been doing this for about 5 years now, and I've, you know, been putting it together and making it all happen, every now and then I'll see in print, they'll say, Mick James is dead. And I'll be like, what? I'm not dead. And I'll be like, you know, it is very weird to hear you say it about yourself, but it's really, really sparked a lot of creativity. And I've never aspired to be like an actor or, you know, a playwright, if you will, whatever you want to call it. I don't know, it's just called, you know, writing movies and stuff like that. It has put me into a whole new headset that even my next CD will be from a movie. I've already written like another, you know, outline for a movie and have some songs in the works for it. You know, we're still looking at this one off the ground, of course, because we're just getting out there playing and we're trying to get the movie going, which is, of course, a lot tougher. But, yeah, that's how it happened. It was very weird and a fluke and almost a joke. We were kidding around, and next thing you know, it was like, just turned into this crazy idea that I knew could work, and it's been getting amazing reception. Very, very excited to get it out there for real, out there, and people see it. The whole stage show, we're doing like a version of the stage show now, pending budget and all that. But when people see the movie, I think they're going to really appreciate it and really get what it's all about.
That's cool, man. You know, well, now that we're talking about being dead, you have a song, 911, Guess What? You're Dead.
Yeah, that's the song that sparked it off. If you want to play that one, that's a song that's featuring Tony Harnell. He sang along with me on the second verse, and he was a member of TNT, if anybody remembers the band TNT from the 90s, I guess. And amazing singer. And recently, in the last couple of weeks, he has joined Skid Row, who Snake from Skid Row played on a different song, on Speeding Like a Fiend. So, you know, Tony's out there doing his thing. He's alive and well. And he really took the song to another level. It was a pleasure to have him on a song. And I got to be honest, I'm a new singer. So having a guy like him who could really sing on it kind of made me nervous, but it was amazing. Our voices really blended together. And even he had said, yeah, you know, we sound good together. And I was kind of blown away. I was a little nervous, I got to be honest. I was like, this guy's going to sing, and then like, you know, people are going to hear me and go, ah. But, you know, it worked out. I'm not the greatest singer, but I have a very distinctive voice, and I do my own thing, and it worked. So, yeah, if you want to play that one, that would be great. Guess What? You're Dead. You know, the intro to it is just like a dialogue piece. The CD has dialogue pieces running through it from the script in between the songs, kind of telling a little bit of the story as it goes on in the song. The CD has all the songs in succession telling the story. But you can play that one if you like. Guess What? You're Dead, rock and roll. The song that sparked it all.
All right, well, here it is. Guess What? You're Dead with Mick James on Power Rock Podcast. Turn it up.
Take it with you, so open your eyes.
We're back with Mick. Dude, that is a killer tune, man. You know, I want to say something to you. Going back to Tony Harnell, a couple years ago, I had the opportunity to spend some time with Tony Harnell. He did a acoustic gig out in North Platte, Nebraska, and he is just a super, super individual, an amazing vocalist. I watched him do the song Love Hurts by Nazareth. And,
yes, and, yes, I've seen him do it, yes.
And brother, it brought chills up my back. It's just unbelievable. And then, as you had stated earlier, you talked about his remake with Skid Row there.
Yeah.
18 in Life.
He just redid it, yeah.
Yeah, that was, I think he did, personally, I think he did an amazing job with that. That is, it was killer. It really was, I thought.
He really did. He's got such an amazing voice. You know, I've been friends with Tony for a while. He's also from, New York, Long Island as well. I've met him on and off throughout the years, you know, really got to talk to him and work with him. And he was not only a pleasure to work with, he really, really took his time with it and did the right thing with it. And, you know, was concerned that I would like it. And like I said, he really took the song up another notch, which was great. And the funny thing is, he, in the acoustic thing you're talking about, I've seen him do Love Hurts. It's just amazing. And did he have Bumblefoot in the band with him at the time?
No, he did it with The Virus.
Oh, okay, because he actually was doing an acoustic album of his own not too long ago called The Wildflowers, I think it was called, and he had Bumblefoot from Guns N' Roses in his band. Bumblefoot also played on one of my tracks, not the ones we're going to play today, but that's another single for another day. But yeah, seeing those two guys together was pretty incredible.
Right on.
And it was an honor to have him on the CD, and I think he's a great fit for Skid Row. I think that, you know, they were doing their, Skid Row's been out there. A lot of people don't hear about them as much, but they've been out there pounding the pavement and putting CDs out and touring all over the world. And, you know, to have a guy like Tony, the band, bring even more attention to what they're doing now and have the song sound, you know, just like they did when they recorded them is a thrill. And I'm sure everybody's excited to get out there and hear them again, you know, so it's a beautiful thing.
Right on. You know, Mick, you have another, I'm going to call it catch, if you will. You got what's called Mick James bitches.
Yes.
Man, brother, enlighten me, man. I mean, tell me about that. How did that start?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. I mean, if anybody's seen the Dave Chappelle show when they spoof, Rick James, they don't really spoof him. They tell stories about when Eddie Murphy and Charlie Murphy, Eddie Murphy's brother, with Rick James, they'd hang out with Rick James when Eddie Murphy started getting famous, and Rick James was crazy. So he would do all kinds of crazy, stupid shit, and you know, they'd say to him, you know, like, you know, what do you, why do you do this? What are you doing? Like, what's wrong with you? And he'd be like, I'm Mick James, bitch, or he'd say, I'm Rick James, bitch. And that was his thing. He just believed that he was Rick James. He was a famous dude who could do whatever the hell he wanted, and that's how he lived his life. And that's what he would say, I'm Rick James, bitch. And you know, there's nothing nobody could do about it. And it's funny, but you know, in reality, walking around like that, saying that for real, it's kind of funny. But you know, when they explained the stories and the reenacted stories from those days when they would hang out with Rick James and he would say that, it just became, you know, it was done in a funny way because Dave Chappelle's one of the funniest guys out there, and he would do that. So, you know, because my name rhymed with, you know, Mick James, Rick James, I had clients that would come in the studio and be like, hey, you're Mick James, bitch, and that's kind of how it started. And even I'd go to clubs, and I'd hear, like, across the club, I'd walk into a club, and I'd hear somebody across the room, yo, you're Mick James, bitch. You know, it just became, like, a funny thing. And then when it escalated was one of my clients, a rap kid, Crispy, he bought me a shirt. He brought me in the studio one day, brought me a shirt, and it said, I'm Mick James, bitch, on it. And I fell on the floor, and I was like, this is hysterical. And the next photo shoot I had done for a bunch of endorsements, I wore the shirt. And I, you know, and at first I was kind of like, people are going to think I'm trying to be cool, or they're going to be like, oh, does this guy think he is? And, you know, it was a joke, and I did it, you know, and the pictures came out really great. I actually didn't even put them out there for a very long time. I kind of just held onto those photos. And then one day I said, fuck it, let me post it. And I posted it on my Facebook. And funny enough, all these girls kept writing and commenting on the photo saying, I want one of those shirts. And I was like, why would a girl want a shirt that says, I'm Mick James, bitch? I don't get it. I'm like, you know, so it actually prompted me to put my store together, which I have out now. You can find it at mickjamesisdead.com. You can find it, you know, the store and get a Mick James, bitch shirt. But what happened was, so I didn't really understand why a girl would want a shirt that said that. And then one girl out of Texas, my friend Mandy, who I've come to know, who's been so supportive, she actually made her own shirt, and it had an apostrophe on it. It said, "I'm Mick James's bitch." And I fell out, and I died, and I said, "Oh, my God, that's it. That's, you know, that makes more sense." So when we made the shirt, I was very, very cautious and thinking to myself, "Oh, man, I'm going to catch mad hell for this. I mean, women are going to be up in arms. People aren't going to get the joke. And, you know, they're gonna think I'm sexist, or they're going to, you know, and I said, fuck it, I'm going to do it anyway. I think it's funny, and maybe most people will get the joke. And, you know, they've seen the Dave Chappelle show, hopefully, and know who Rick James was, and maybe they'll get a kick out of it. And, you know, funny enough, when I put them out, they have become, to this day, my biggest selling shirt. Women from all over the world have been buying these shirts, wearing them, taking pictures of them for me. And it's just become, you know, a funny thing. You would never dream that would be something that people would be, you know, interested in wearing. I'm Mick James's bitch. So, you know, all these women are my bitches now. You know? So
that's awesome.
My fan club has become the bitches and bros. That's what, you know, all my fans, like all my bitches and the guys are my bros. And it's the bitches and bros. It's just, you know, it is what it is. You're my bitch. It means you love me and I love you and we're down. And,
love
you know,
it,
I really do love all the fans because they are amazing. But that's how it started. And, you know, it's funny enough, there is every now and then we get somebody who gets offended and, you know, they don't belong on my page anyway because I'm extremely offensive. So you either get the joke or you don't get the joke, you know?
Right on, man. You know, since we're talking about Mick James bitches, I got a question from Ashley. And she wants to know, just how many bitches do you have? And could you make room for one more?
I'm not sure who Ashley is.
Well, here's the thing, Mick. I suck with last names. So I don't use last names because I can't pronounce half of these last names. I can't pronounce them. So I'm going by first names only.
Yeah, no, that's okay. That's okay. I'm sure you probably know her from being online, or maybe not. Maybe she's a new fan. Well, I can say this. I don't really talk too much about my personal private life. However, I don't have a one steady bitch at all. Let's keep it at that. So I am very single, and that would depend. So you never know. There's always the opportunity, and I'm not running away from a relationship in any way, shape, or form. I'm just not in one. So busy that I'm not even looking for one. But you never know. You know, you always gotta. What's gotta happen is you gotta come to a show, and you gotta come meet me, and then who knows? One never knows what happens from there. The playing field could be equal.
Okay, cool, man. Here's another fan question for you. Her name is Kathy, and she wants to know, after doing a live gig, what is it that you want the audience to remember about you?
You know, I mean, it's a great question, actually. The funny part about this is, you know, I've been playing live all my life as a kid, growing up. I've toured in 5 different countries in Europe with my previous band, Earth Eats Dog, Canada, Virgin Islands, all over the States. And, you know, truth is that it was a great band, and it was something that we left knowing that people enjoyed the show, enjoyed the music, bought a lot of CDs, and that was fulfilling at the time, and that's cool. And, of course, that's always the beauty is when you come back to a place where you've been, especially like a place in Europe and in Germany, per se, and people know the words to the music, you know, and that's just a thrilling thing. Because they bought in a CD last time you were out and you know, fell in love with the CD or whatever the case is. This whole thing is a little different in the sense of, you know, I've always wanted to do a very theatrical thing in the sense of, like, you know, growing up listening to, like, Kiss and Alice Cooper and all these bands, and always wanted to do something like that, like I'm doing now. And this was the first time I've actually said, you know what, I'm going to do this. I have this opportunity, I have this little slice of fame from doing the Chris Angel thing, and I'm not just going to put a CD out. I want to do something that's going to actually turn heads and make people, you know, go, holy shit. And I mean, to me, I've seen acts, just because you wear makeup, just because you dress crazy, you know, they get out there and they do their thing. Stage show doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense. And that's, you know, it's cool too. It's theatrical. And I appreciate anybody who goes the extra mile to actually look like they're in a band. You know, I don't think you have to look like what I look like and get crazy, but it's good to go see a band that actually looks like they're musicians. But for me, it's more about when I'm on that stage, I want everybody to just have the greatest time. I want them to feel affected by something. I want them to kind of get a sense of what's happening with the storyline, because again, it's very vague. The CD is somewhat vague. You know, you're going by lyrics and these little dialogue pieces from the script, kind of getting a sense of what's happening in the movie. When you see it live, you get a little more of a sense. And eventually there'll be screens up on the, behind us, with a little video helping along the story. But nobody will really get what's going on until they see the actual movie. So for me, I want to entice people to want to really see the movie, because I want them to kind of, and I want it to affect their personal life as well, because it's something that is very touching and means a lot to me, in the sense of it does touch upon my real life, and it opened my eyes to a lot of things that when you die, you know, if you didn't do certain things in life, you're going to regret that. So, you know, there's a little of that going on. So I do want it to affect people in the sense of make them stop and think. But even more so, immediately when I'm on stage, I turn into a different guy, and I want them to walk away just going, holy shit, he's fucking crazy. You know, I have no problem with literally just jumping in the audience, fucking doing anything that makes people want to scream. And so for me, I just want people to have an amazing time. I want them to think about things, and I want them to really, really be affected enough to want to watch the movie and find out the real story of the CD and the live stage show, you know. And of course, you know, it's a thing where, like, you're also building a base, building a fan base. I mean, I have a fan base all over the world, but it's spotty. You know what I mean? There's 100 people here in Spain. There's 10,000 in Canada. There's 1,000, you know, in Argentina. It's like all different pieces, but when you play live, you kind of connect the dots, and those 100 people turn into 2,000 people, and they start connecting. They start kind of building up, and that's the whole thing, to do a good enough show where people want to tell people about it, and not only tell people about it, that next time I come around, they will be there and so will the people they told about it. I mean, that's basically the goal of just multiplying the fan base and really getting it out there on a major level. I'm pretty confident that this show is going to make people go, holy shit, you know? So,
you know what makes
that's
you,
pretty much it.
You know what makes you awesome, Mick, is this, is that you are an entertainer, musician, singer, songwriter. You don't care to be different. You choose to be you, and you're not just going to be another fucking plain old entertainer. You're going to call your shots. You're going to be who you are, and you're not going to follow the Joneses, which I think is great. You are willing to step out into something that other people simply are afraid to do. And my hat goes off to you, my friend, because it takes balls to do what you're doing.
Well, I thank you, and I'll be honest with you. I agree 100% in the sense of, I just see so many bands, and it has nothing to do with, like, there's always a crop of new bands within a new genre cropping up every 5 years or whatever, that, you know, a particular style. I was never a fan of the emo type stuff, but it had nothing to do with, like, hey, that's not my generation or anything like that. It has nothing to do with that. There's bands that are just outstanding in those genres, and it turns out to me, in the last, I don't know, 5 years or more, I'm hearing all these bands that come out, they sound the same, they have the same name, you know, changed around. It's the same. It's like almost hearing and watching the same band. And for me, it's gotten so stagnant. It's like, no, I'm not, I'm not following these trends. It's like, I'm going to blaze my own trail. And that's pretty much what I've done musically, you know, image wise, matching it with the theatrical. Not that I'm the first guy to do it, but I'm the first guy to do it in a little bit of a different way. Like, even Alice Cooper, who's such a major, major influence on me, he's always had concept records and different things out, but he's never really done an entire show dedicated to a concept. It's always been, you know, a couple songs from this concept, a couple songs from that concept. You know, Pink Floyd The Wall does it. They do, like, an entire show from beginning to end, which is Pink Floyd The Wall. That's the concept, that's the show, that's the CD. And it's more like that. It's more about, you know, putting on one concept. And I'm sure down the road when I come out with other CDs and I'm a completely different guy and I'm not dead anymore, because I've had people like my brother ask me, you know, what are you going to do next? You're going to be dead. Then what are you doing? And, you know, then I'll be a different guy. I'll be a different character. I'll be a different, you know, it'll be a whole different concept for another project. But I'm sure we will always come back years down the road, like Pink Floyd does, and revisit Mick James is Dead in a stage show kind of thing. And, you know, it's something that I'm extremely proud of and just wish I can get it out there. I can't get it out there fast enough. I'm waiting on tour dates right now just to get it out there to people and really, really have them connected. The shows we've done so far have been outstanding. I mean, the people have just been off the chart supportive and loving it. We've been getting amazing reviews, whether it's CD reviews or show reviews. And, you know, I can't ask for anything more than that. That's all I want is just people to really get what I'm doing. And so far, people are getting it, you know.
Awesome. You know, you had named a specific artist a moment ago. So that's going to bring me to my next question. And it's this. This question comes from Don. And Don wants to know, do you ever plan to cover another Alice Cooper song?
Well, I tell you what, Don, I might. I mean, the bottom line is, this project is taking so long to kind of get off the ground due to the fact that I haven't been out there live, and we're doing some crazy scheduling as far as trying to get touring going all over the world. I mean, we're working on the stage first here. And what's happening is it's taking so long, and the CD's been out for a year already. So it might be another year or two before I get another CD out, full, real-blown, actual CD like this one. So what I've been toying up to hold my fans over and to keep myself not going crazy and keep myself a little sane, I might actually put out a CD of cover songs to hold everybody off, you know, which I can record pretty quickly and kind of do my own versions of some classics. And there might be an Alice Cooper song in there. I don't know. I haven't thought of one I'd like to do yet, but I do have some really crazy songs that I've thought of that I'd like to cover. And I think that's probably going to be the next thing I put out, just for the love of the fans, to give them something to hold on to you know, keep them excited about what's happening. We might do a full-length version cover album, and then that'll buy me some time to get my next CD together. Once, of course, we get all the touring going, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be writing songs on the road for my next project and all that fun stuff. So you never know, Don. It might happen.
All right. Well, thanks for answering that question, brother. Let's go back to the CD. I want to talk about my favorite song on the disc, Speeding Like a Fiend. Tell us about that.
Speeding Like a Fiend. Okay, there's a lot of things to this song. It's pretty funny. When I had been working with Chris Angel, let's say season two, I believe, he had said to me at one point, he was very influenced by Korn. He loved Korn. And he said to me, you know, Mickey, I love what we're doing, but I'd like to go in a little more of a direction like Korn. I'd like to sound, you know, in that vein. So, you know, immediately I said to myself, okay, well, if that's the case, I need to get a 7-string guitar. I mean, that's how you sound like Korn. So I went and got a 7-string guitar. And keep in mind, again, like a singer, like a new singer, I was basically a new guitar player as well. I had only started really playing guitar. I've been a bass player all my life, but play keyboards here and there. I mean, play everything, but really, as a guitarist, I've been relatively new as a player and really only started playing guitar professionally because Chris had coaxed me on very early when we first started working together in 03. I said, you know, hey, look, we should bring a guitar player. And he said, no, you know, why don't you just do it? And I said, all right, you know, and I did what I did. And as time went on, I grew to be, you know, a very different, distinctive kind of guitar player because I don't, I didn't learn how to play like a regular guy. And I really don't know how to play like a regular guy. And I don't play 6 strings, I play 7 strings. So it became something really cool. But at that time, when I first bought this 7-string, and it was a $200 piece of crap 7-string. As a matter of fact, I'm playing it in the video behind Chris when he's singing the Mind Freak theme song. Mind Freak! And he's doing that on the TV show behind him in the desert. It's me playing blue guitar. It's a Squire 7-string, you know, Fender Cop, if you will, or a cheaper version of a Fender, if you will. And, you know, it's sounded great, but it was a piece of crap. I bought it from a buddy of mine for $200. Never played a 7-string in my life. I had got it from him, walked into my kitchen at the time where I was living, and I pulled the guitar out, just so excited to look at it and play it. And the second I picked it up, I started playing the riff for Speeding Like a Fiend. And I said, wow, this is a great riff. It's just like, oh my God, I love this. This fucking seven string thing is awesome. And I took it and I recorded a little piece of it. And when I was doing songs for season two for Chris Angel, I played them back along with, you know, 14 or 15 other pieces. I think I ended up doing like 16 songs for that second season. And he heard it and he said, you know, Mickey, I don't really like that riff too much. I said, oh, okay, no worries. You know, it wasn't really to him. So I kept it on the side, but I knew it was for me. you know, there was a couple songs like that that really didn't fit what we were doing for his stuff. It was a little too much rock, per se. And, you know, I knew it was something for me, so I just kind of kept it on the side. And then when I came up with the concept for writing a song, it was a perfect shooting for a song to get killed in a car accident to. It was just so speeding and fast and energetic and had all that amazing feel to it. So that's kind of how it happened. It was funny. It was something that he turned away. It actually worked out good in my favor. And then the killer part of it all was when I started contacting different guests who I was going to get. I had been in touch with Snake from Sigro and Snake Sabo, and he was like, yeah, I'll play on it. He came in the studio and he played, and he absolutely tore it up and did such an amazing job. I couldn't be happier. And the funny thing about this was he had borrowed a guitar to do it, to come into the studio. He didn't have any guitars with him. He was like, oh, well, you know, he borrowed a guitar and had a whammy on it. I guess he doesn't normally play with the whammy bar. But when it came time for him to do his little solo, if you hear the intro of Speeding Like a Fiend, not the intro, the intro of the solo at the end of the song, he does this little wow, like a little whammy bar thing. And funny enough, when he did that, he was just kind of messing around with it. It became something really cool. I said, oh, that's great. I love that. And he did a little harmony under it, and it became like the very beginning of the solo. The weirdest thing in the world was when we put the video together. There's a picture of me driving recklessly in this car. And I kind of pull off to the side a little bit as I'm driving, like weaving all over the road. Just worked out like a fluke, perfectly in time with that little whammy bar bend. And I got to say, he played such the perfect thing. Just worked so perfectly with the whole song. So when you see the video and you hear that, it was just kind of like a fluke. The way the car moved and the way the guitar sounded. And again, it was such a thrill being a Skid Row fan back in the day, having a guy like Snake on the CD. And yeah, roll it. Speeding Like a Fiend, my friend.
All right. Here it is. Speeding Like a Fiend with Mick James on Power Rock Podcast. We're back with Mick. Mick, you know, you know what my favorite part of that video is? Is probably the first minute, and I've played it over and over and over again.
You know, since you brought that up, I just want to touch upon it real quickly. You know, people think that's just gratuitous, you know, whatever, let's have fun. It's really part of the movie. That's what it's all about. And it's not necessarily, the movie has nothing to do with sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but they're very excessive in the movie. And that's really kind of setting up the character, if you will.
Okay.
It's not like, you know, I went out of my way to say, oh, yeah, let's do this thing with two girls. And, you know, it's all part of the movie. And that's, you know, a lot of people understand that. Some people don't get it. Either way, people are getting a great reaction from it, and I'm glad you liked it. I was rough being me that day, and we can move on now. Just letting everybody know that.
All righty. Here's another fan question for you. Anthony wants to know, what would you be doing if you were not performing?
You know what? That would be a real tough question because I'm pretty much a clown all day long. You know, if anybody's on my Facebook page, I've been kind of like the class clown since I'm a kid. You know, bottom line is, it's funny to me because not only is it amazing to have a fan base to get my music across, of course, and my update people on my career when I'm playing and all that stuff. I find an open forum to be a funny, goofy bastard, which I am. I just, you know, I find that, you know, if you're not laughing, then you're not living. And I a lot of times go out of my way purposely to just say something that will make people laugh. And I think, I never thought of it before, but I think if I wasn't a musician, I think I'd have to become a comedian of some sort. And I'm not saying I'm not funny, that I could be, but I crack myself up, and I think that's more important than anything. I think that, I've actually, in my mind, entertained that. If I couldn't play music anymore, I would have to get on stage and be a stand-up comic, I think.
You know, dude, humor is healthy. Laughter is healthy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, Mick, I want to ask you one more question. We're going to go into another song, and then we're going to close this out, man. And here's the question, brother. Rumor has it that you have slept in a casket. Is this true?
Well, is it true? Well, the truth is I didn't necessarily sleep in it. But, yes, I photo shoots and spent many hours in a casket and on an embalming table. And it was a very crazy experience. I talked about this, you know, in a lot of interviews, but it always is so surreal to me because, you know, I mean, first of all, when I thought of this concept, you know, I knew immediately it would affect family and friends and you know, how would people take this and with them seeing things like that. And I went to a funeral home of a childhood friend who had taken over for her father. And so that's how I had access to the funeral home. And I said, look, could I come in and do, you know, photos? And she was like, yeah, you know, no problem. We'll get you a casket. And they brought a you know, beautiful brand new casket up from the basement, which if you've seen them, it's just like a car. It's like buying a car. It's so, you know, expensive. And it really is a big, beautiful casket. And I had been recently single at the time. So I was living on my couch in the studio. So I got to be honest with you. When I got into that casket, it was freaking comfortable. I was loving it.
Are you serious?
I mean, I could have slept there for hours.
That's scary, and, man.
yeah. You know, and the funny thing was, we did all these photos, and I honestly just remember like looking up at the sky and saying, you know, hey, God, I'm not tempting fate. It's pretty scary, emotional, and it's pretty crazy when you see the pictures back here in a. And, you know, the whole thing is I warned everybody, my family, my the mother of my children and my mother and my brother. I said, look, if I die first, you dress me goofy, there's going to be a problem.
So right on.
It kind of made me think about that. They better put me in some of my rock and roll clothes. That's all I'm asking. Between that and we did some shots on the embalming table. That was just absolutely you know, crossing the line in so many senses of the word. And, you know, it's a very cold metal table that has a hole at the bottom, and they have a tilt on it so that all the fluids run down out the thing. And you see this and you're like, wow. And there had been a dead body on it like 15 minutes earlier. And, you know, they said, hey, you know, do you want to take some photos on your vomit table? I was like, sure. And they're like, well, let's just clear the body off. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this. And, you know, the photos were just so amazing, and I held on to those photos. I did those like 3-4 years ago. I held on to them until the CD cover came out. I think on the back cover is they're inside the booklet. There's a lot of photos in the CD, and you know, I really especially didn't want my mother to see it, and you know, when she did see it, she's like, I want to see it. She just showed it to her, and she it wasn't, you know, it's not nothing you want to see your mother see.
No.
And you know, it was just really weird. And I think the freakiest thing, and I've said this in the past as well, the freakiest thing of it all is, even though I don't live in that area anymore, because they were friends of the family, I think that when I do die, they probably are going to bring me to that funeral home. So that was the freakiest thing, thinking to myself that, you know, I'm here a little early.
Well, I had stated earlier, you know, the one thing that I admired about you is that you dared to be different, and that pretty much sums it up, man.
You know what it is? I mean, throughout the years, being in bands and watching bands, seeing bands, I've said it in the past, but I didn't really mean it like I do now. I don't really give a fuck anymore. You know, I mean, that's flat out. I don't care who's offended by what I do. I don't care who's you know, gonna, you know, have a problem with it or not like me anymore. I mean, I've had people who are huge fans of my old band, Earthy Stove, used to come see the band and love the band. They used to buy all the CDs and just like, when are you coming out with another CD and have all the shirts and be a huge fan, and then see me do a solo thing, which that was like a funky rock band. And this is like a theatrical, you know, heavy rock thing, half industrial. You know, there were people who saw the video and were absolutely offended and like, oh my God, what's he doing? And, you know, they just no longer follow me. And I, you know what? I don't really give shit. it's more about, look, I'm not here to blend in with the scene. I'm here to rise above it. And that's what I have every intention of doing. I have every intention of making it so that you just cannot ignore me. And that is, at the end of the day, my goal in life is to make you, even if you don't like me, you're still going to go like Howard Stern. I mean, people would listen to him and they would say they hated him. They wanted him off the air, but they would listen to him every day. You know, it's kind of like that. It's, you know, all the closet fans who just can't, you know, not look and say, hey, well, what's he doing? What's going on? And I got all kinds of snoopy people and fake profiles all over my pages. And I love it. You know what? There's nothing you can see being a friend of mine on Facebook that you can't see from not being a friend of mine on Facebook. It's an open page. And bottom line is, I really don't give a shit what anybody thinks. And that in itself has freed me from worrying about what somebody's going to like and not like. And you know what? If you don't like it, that's wonderful. But the beauty is, this is the first project I've ever done in my entire life, musically, in my career, where it's very clear. This is the kind of music it is. This is the kind of thing it is. And if you like that kind of music, if you dig Rob Zombie, if you dig Marilyn Manson, you dig Alice Cooper, you're going to like this. If you don't like that stuff, you're not going to like it. Don't even bother. And that's, I'm okay with that. I'm not trying to, you know, get everybody in the world to be my fan. I want the people who like what I do to be my fan. That's the end of the day, you know.
Well, Mick, listen, I want to talk about one more song, brother, and we're going to close it out. The name of this song is called Dead and Gone. How about some history on that one?
Well, Dead and Gone is, like I said, all the songs are in succession. So, you know, Speeding Like a Fiend, the character gets into a bit of a fender bender where he finds himself dead, which, you know, goes through the process of, guess what, you're dead, finding out that he's dead. And Dead and Gone is where he sees himself in his wake and sees what people really think of him and how he's affected people in his life, family, friends, and that kind of thing, and realizes that maybe he wasn't the greatest guy when he was alive. So this happens to be one of my favorite songs. Very, very something that was very evident when I was writing it, that I was really, really telling a story, you know, and it just flowed out of me. The lyrics came right out. I wrote the lyrics to this song literally in like 10 minutes. It just popped out of me, and it was great. And, you know, just a little backing before you play the song. If anybody's interested in checking out a CD, you can get it on iTunes. Mick James is Dead. But if you want a hard copy, which I signed a personally addressed photo to people, signed the CD and a custom guitar pick, if they want anything like that, it's called a CD package. They can get it on my website, mickjamesisdead.com. And you can find all my social media on there as well. You can find my Twitter, my Facebook, Reverb Nation, where you can hear more songs, you know, anything, Instagram, all that shit. So you can find me. I'm out there. Again, the project, Mick James is Dead, and this is called Dead and Gone.
Here it is, my friend, Dead and Gone with Mick James. Turn it up on Power Rock Podcast.
Where are my actual friends? My cousins, my uncles. My mother didn't even go up to the casket.
Thank you, man, from the bottom of my heart, you taking your time. I know time is precious with you. Man, you know, it's been a complete honor of mine to be able to speak with you, to get some inside history about yourself. I want to wish you the utmost success in all that you do. Everything that you put your hands on, man, I want to see gold. I'm proud to say that I have spoke with Mick James.
Thank you, brother. My pleasure, actually. You know, I do so many of these interviews, you know, sometimes it gets to be a drag, but honestly, I appreciate it. I you've been so supportive of me, and I totally appreciate it. And I urge all the fans to get out there and really take a listen. And every now and then, even though a lot of the interviews have similar questions because of obviously the content of what I'm doing, you definitely brought a couple of things out in me today that people might not have known about or heard about. So, you know, you got to love it. I'm hoping that people dig it and, you know, dig the songs and bring some more attention to building the fan base. So when I come to a town near you, you will know the songs and dig the songs and be out there rock and rolling.
All right. Well, Mick, I thank you for your kind words. There you have it, an interview with Mick James on Power Rock Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Madonna. Peace.